Today is Tuesday, March 19th, 2024, and you're listening to the Ask a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Nate. All right, let's get into Romans 3. Romans 3, 31, last verse is Paul talking about the law of Moses. Yes, or something else. The law of Moses. So we're talking about that. What law, if any, should Christians be obligated to keep? Not for salvation. That's like the buzzword, right? Like, it can't be for salvation. But then how are you obligated? Anyway, I think he's asking, like, what should Christians do? Anyway, so we talk about that and flesh that out for a while, so that's good. Talking about Romans 3. So then we talk about, runs into that, civil, moral, ceremonial law, these type things. And then somehow that gets into feminism and how it is inherently a deceitful concept. It is not to empower women. That's what people say it's for, but many times founders of these movements and founders of these things, like, you know, feminism, for example, critical theory, other things, the founders say it's to empower women or empower people or stick up for the oppressed. But deceitfully, the part they don't tell you until you find out from, like, their dead diary writings years after they've passed are things like it's to subvert family structure, to thumb, like, put a thumb in the eye of the Christian God, to fight against Christianity and Christian values. That's the stuff they don't want you to know. So people that buy into this with no research are naive, and they're like, it's to empower me, when it's really not. And we see that now. We talk about now how, like, people in the feminism movement are having to take a backseat to trans women who are dudes who decide they want to be women. So, like, wait, guys, we're women. We're supposed to be empowered. And now they're called phobes and bigots and everything if they try to go for woman empowerment, because now it's trans woman empowerment. So that's an unfortunate way to learn that lesson. So keep that in mind. It's the same thing for feminism, critical theory, everything in that, like, five branch poison tree. And you know, the dude who came out with that, it's like, oh, I'm oppressed. I'm a victim. I need help. I need to be empowered as a victim or whatever. Some French dude in, like, the 1800s that came up with this idea, he was very anti-God, anti-Christian. And it just kills me. Whenever these people come out with these things to, like, subvert reality, the world, God, Christianity, it's always about the Christian God. Why does no one ever want to, like, you know, cause problems for Allah or, you know, I don't know, Shiva the Destroyer or Ganesh? Like, why does no one ever need to cause problems for Zeus? Why is it always the Christian worldview and the God of the Bible? Maybe, like, there's something truthful to that? Anyway, so whenever you hear these people's writings and you read them, it's like, well, yeah, we need to destroy the family structure to bring about demise of the social fabric and stuff like that. Anyway, it gets into a whole nest, which is really not the scope of this room, but I don't know, man, what is the scope of this room? But I think it's worth noting and being wary of. Then we get into politics a little bit, talk about Trump's bloodbath comment. Anyone who thinks it's seriously a problem is just ridiculous. Like, they have their head stuck so far in the sand, they probably aren't going to be found again. Like, the only place you can go to see the, like, 20-second clip of him saying, like, oh, it's a bloodbath, blah, 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 and not have context is on news. And if that's all you saw, that means that's the kind of news you're watching. So, God help you, because we can't. It's absolutely no problem. So, then we talk about Advil equity, not equality, equity. Advil pain equity, because they say different races feel pain differently. Then we get into Genesis 5 and Genesis 6, talking about Nephilim and the sons of God. Who are these people? So we talk about that for a while, and then Chris and Michael drag us into presuppositional apologetics hell. I say this every time to time. I say this. If you're a Christian and Jesus is your Savior, this is the closest to hell you will ever get. So, yes, I'm not a fan of the presuppositional argument and apologetics. I have never seen it successfully work in a way that is not contentious and just obnoxious and, oh, good Lord. And as a Christian, the presupposition apologetic is fine because I agree with all the points. There is a God. The Bible is his word. There's objective morality. It's grounded in God. I agree with all this, but it's easy because I'm a Christian. Like, I already believe this. But if you're not a Christian, it's really big asks, because if you can get them to concede, well, then you've got them. But why would anyone concede? It would be through God opening their eyes, which would mean they're a Christian. So you could just forego the entire debate. So, you know, preach Christ and him crucified. I understand that different people will come to salvation through different ways. Maybe if you're an I don't know, ex-gang member, a guy in a suit and tie is not going to get you in the door of a church. But maybe like a guy in a biker jacket who's like, hey, I used to kill people. Now I love Jesus. It's like, oh, yeah, that sounds like me. Maybe I should listen to him. And there's different debate tactics. There's different convincing. Like, we're not called to convince anyone. We're called to share the good news. But still, people will have different cadence, different manner of speaking. So I understand. I don't want to be a hater of the pre-sup arguments. But, man, I've just never seen it end well. The best I've seen it end is where tensions start rising and people are like, okay, we should just stop talking about this. That's the best I've ever seen it go. And I've been around a while. So if anyone knows of a time where someone has converted and they credit presuppositional apologetics, let me know and send a link to the video. I would love to see it. AskACHristianClub@gmail.com. I would love to watch it, and then I could maybe change my tune. But up until now, it's been like I've known about this thing for over a decade, and I've never seen it go well. Anyway, on that happy note, enjoy the discussion, and we'll catch you later. Share these links.
I don't know if you were talking about
anything. Sure. Absolutely not. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. Romans chapter 3, verse 31. Now, Romans 3, you know, he's talking about justification, how we're justified apart from the works of the law, you know, but by faith in Jesus Christ. But he talks about how do we make void the law? No, we actually establish the law. Now, I was curious if you have any thoughts on what that law is. Is it referring to the law of Moses? Is it just the Ten Commandments? Is it the 600? You know, what law? Do you have any thoughts on that? If you don't, that's okay. I struggle with this one.
Oh, I have tons of thoughts. So specifically, like Romans 31, I'd want to check my context. Like, I have it here, but I can't read the whole thing that fast. But I'm gonna say, I mean, whenever Paul talks about the law, like if you read Galatians, that's, you know, I don't want to answer from ignorance, but I mean, I believe Romans 3 is going to be all that. It's not just the Ten Commandments. It's nothing like that. Whenever he talks about the law, he's either talking about the law of sin and death, which he calls the law of Moses, the 613 commandments. And he talks about the law of the Spirit, the one that, you know, with the Holy Spirit living in us, leads us and guides us in truth and understanding, that law, how even with no law, people instinctively knew what to do was right, that. So when Paul's talking about Romans, unless someone's going to point out some really good reason why it's not the case, which it has to be. Let's see. Let me just read a little bit. So maybe we can read it. The righteousness of God. Okay. Manifest. Apart from the law. Yeah, that's the law of Moses. And it says it. Although the law and prophets bear witness to it, the righteousness of God through faith in Jesus for all who believe, there's no distinction. All have sinned. All are justified as a gift. Redemption of Christ. Perpetuation of his blood received by faith. This was to show God's righteousness. Because he passed former sins, shows righteousness for his time. Justified by the faith in Jesus, comes to boasting, is excluded by, and what becomes of our boasting is excluded by what kind of law? By law of works? No, by law of faith. We hold justified apart from the works of the law. Circumcised by faith, circumcised through faith. Okay, and your question is what? Specifically about the very last, like saying by having faith, like we, what, are overthrowing or not fulfilling the law?
Well, what I struggle with is this. Like he says, we established the law. So is he saying that the law of Moses is still valid? Is it still binding on us?
No. Read Galatians. Like the entire book of Galatians has all your answers.
I understand. I'm familiar with Galatians, but I'm saying, like, what does it mean when he says we established the law? Now, I know the law brings the knowledge of sin, right?
Yes.
But what is he saying? We established the law. What exactly is he saying? That's what I'm struggling with. Well, I agree.
Where do you see establish the law?
Oh, I have the King James. I don't know what that... I mean, the King James says establish the law.
Is it verse 31 in the King James?
Yeah. Yeah, he says we establish the law.
That's weird. So, hang on, let me just bring up King James.
Yeah, take it. Yeah, because it says... Blue letter Bible. Go ahead.
In ESV, it says... whatever it says, I just read it. Hang on, 31. It says overthrow the law. That's like the opposite of establish. Okay. King James. Do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid. Yea, we establish. Oh, uphold. Okay. No. So by faith, that's the whole thing, right? Because that's like a Hebrew Israelite thing. Not that you are, but when they say, you know, Jesus didn't do away with the law. He didn't abolish the law. He says he came to fulfill the law. Yeah, we believe that. So when Jesus fulfills the law, it is fulfilled. It's not overthrown. We don't abolish it. We love God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourselves. That's what all the law and all the prophets hang on. So no one's getting rid of the law, but our faith in Jesus Christ is what justifies, you know, is why Jesus, we're justified before God. So it's by faith. The law is still there. The law is like all shiny and right there pointing out how sinful mankind is and how it doesn't have the power to save. It only has the power to condemn, just like he says in Galatians. But here we are having faith in Jesus who kept that law perfectly. So like another way to say that, like I wouldn't want to say this for someone that really doesn't understand it, because it could kind of sound misleading. But basically, if you want to say we totally keep the law, then yes, Christians totally keep all 613 commands of the Levitical law by having faith in Jesus. So it's like by proxy. So again, it's not a Christian way of saying it, but if it helps people understand it better, no, the law is still there. The law is all staring at us, showing us a mirror of how sinful we are and how we can't be saved. But we keep that law perfectly by having faith in Jesus because he kept that law perfectly. So I don't know if that's more confusing, but it's a different way of saying it. It's not the most accurate way of saying it, but sometimes if people kind of visualize that, it's like, yeah, the law is not abolished. It's kept. It's fulfilled in Jesus. We have faith in Jesus. Therefore, we keep the law.
Thank you, Nate. I'm just thinking, I'm gathering my thoughts, but thank you for your thoughts on this. I don't know, maybe, I'm sure Chris has some thoughts.
Sure, yeah, Chris, would you say that, I mean, you'd probably say it the right way, but would you say anything about that? Edwin's first question was Romans 3:31. Is that talking about the law of Moses? And I'm going to just say yes. And then compare that with faith, or contrast it with faith. Oh my gosh, Chris.
Sorry, I'm just reading.
I don't want to say you're disappointing us all.
Because you guys kept talking about it, but you didn't recapitulate what verse you were exactly talking about, so I couldn't look at it while you were talking.
Oh, it's because you're late. Do you have it yet? I can read it again.
No, I got it. Do we then abolish the law? Through faith, may it never be. On the contrary, we establish the law. That's definitely the Mosaic law.
Okay, so some Christians believe that what it when it talks about establishing the law, they would say that the law of Moses is still, except like the moral law and the civil law is binding on Christians, but not like the ceremonial law.
Well, I mean, I'm not real sure how the civil law would be binding on Christians, because that has to do with living in the nation of Israel and 3000 BC, yeah. You know.
I think theonomist. I think that's maybe theonomy. Maybe that's what I'm. But anyway.
Theonomy, yeah. I mean, you know, like Bonson and those cats would be all about like the theonomy. I just think theonomy is a theory looking for a reality. You know, like it's very post-mill. But
okay, you know. No, thanks, Chris. So would you say like what I think what Nate is saying, that we, because of faith, we have kept the law through faith in Christ. Is that correct, Nate? Am I paraphrasing you correctly?
Yes. Yeah, I'm fine with that. If someone wants to say, like, if they want to, like, burn me at the stake or something, I'll clarify. But, yeah, I mean, if that helps people understand, it's like, look, no one's throwing the law away. Otherwise, what would Jesus have kept? So he kept the law. It's right there. It's completed. He's fulfilled it. So you could say we complete that just by having faith in Jesus.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analysis, Nate. I mean, the context, Romans starting in 3:27, where then is boasting? It is excluded by what kind of law? Of works? No, but of a law of faith. For we maintain that a man is justified by faith apart from the works of the law, or is God the God of the Jews only? Is he not the God of the Gentiles also? Yes, of Gentiles also. Since indeed God, who will justify the circumcised by faith and the uncircumcised by faith, is one. Do we then abolish the law through faith? May it never be, right? This is mekinetos. But the on the contrary, we establish the law. So the thing about establishing the law is exactly what Nate is saying in terms of establishing the law. We talk about the law as the power over sin and death and as the schoolmaster to point us to faith in Christ. So rather than some type of theonomist take on 331, I would say that the argument that Paul is laying out is that the law of sin and death that is there to point us to faith in Christ is established by our faith. Does that make sense?
Can you reiterate that last line again, Chris? I appreciate it. Can you use a different word besides establish, like a synonym? I think that might help me. Like, is it we affirm the purpose?
Yeah, affirm
the
law.
Yeah, we affirm the purpose of the law by our faith, because what we're saying is that, you know, no one can please God without faith, right? And that the law is, and Paul points out in 2 and 3 of Romans that the law is there specifically to make us hopeless, to make sure to crush us under its weight in order to teach us that there's no way we could keep it, that we need Christ in order for the law to have value.
Okay.
Yeah,
go ahead, Nate, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, about the pardon me, about the boasting thing. Because, yeah, we can't boast, right? Because it's not what we're doing. Otherwise, we could be like, look at us. Look how much holier I am. Look how many, look how few sacrifices I had to make because I keep the laws better than you. But then Paul says, look, in Galatians 6, if you're going to boast, far be it for me to boast, except in the cross of Jesus Christ, our Lord. So it's like, well, look, if we're not going to boast in ourselves because we can't keep it. But if we're going to boast, you're like, boast about Jesus. Like, yes, Jesus kept that. Jesus did that. And I have faith in Jesus, so Jesus saved me. Like, brag about Jesus a little bit.
Thanks, Nate. So what would you say, and I appreciate the feedback on this. So what law today, as a Christian, is binding on me, do I have to keep?
Me and Chris are going to have slightly different answers. I'm going to say absolutely
I'm going to say the moral law. Like,
right.
Binding in what? In terms of keeping your salvation?
I understand I'm justified, but through faith in Christ, I don't need to keep the law to maintain my standing before God. You know, I'm a Calvinist, but I'm just saying in terms of my obligation before God as my creator, obviously I know I'm not to steal and to kill. That would be unloving, but how would you say that's the law of Christ? Would you say that's the law?
I'm passionate about this. And yeah, Chris will differ a little bit. It's basically the same thing. Practically, there's no difference. But Chris is going to say the moral law, the Ten Commandments, and whatever he's going to say. I'm going to say none, because it's not your law. You have the law of the Spirit. It's just a coincidence that the law of the Spirit is going to say, hey, don't lie, don't cheat, don't steal, don't murder. So the fact that it also says it in the moral law of Moses is just a happy coincidence. So, I mean, practically there's no difference, but Chris likes to go deep philosophical. So this would be one of the things where I take that track with him. So it's like, look, the law in Leviticus 18 says, do not lie. But that's not our law. We're not bound to it. We're bound by the law of the Spirit. It just so happens, I believe, the law of the Spirit says, hey, do not lie. So it's kind of semantics, and it's like the same thing, but I'm pretty passionate about that. So, you know, like, that's how Paul says, look, even people without the law, they instinctively knew what was right, even though they didn't have the law. But go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not going to disagree with that. I agree with that. I think that because, you know, we see in Ezekiel 36 and Jeremiah 31, where God in the new covenant promises to write the law on our hearts. And in fact, we see this in Deuteronomy 20 and 30, I believe, where he promises to write the law on our hearts. Like, it's the same law. It's just, how are you accessing it? You're accessing it through your enlightened conscience by being a new creature in Christ.
Oh, thanks, Chris. So I appreciate it. And I want to, that serendipity is okay. I don't want to dominate the stage, but the law that's written on our hearts, is it, it's not like the sacrificial law, is it? Like the law of like the you know, burnt offerings, for example, there are rules regarding burnt offerings and other commands. It's not, or is it just like the Ten Commandments?
No, it's just the moral, just this moral law.
Okay.
I mean, there's more to the moral law than the Ten Commandments, but yeah, I mean, it's just the moral law, that's all.
I guess we, how do we deter, I struggle with like what the moral law is.
The Holy Spirit will lead you into truth and understanding. That's not very helpful sounding.
Right, I mean, like, true. The moral law is literally written in the Old Testament. I mean, you can go read it. Like, I'm not sure, like, are you asking me for a different source?
No, no, I'm just saying, like, when you say moral law, is that the 600 and, how many, was it, 637?
No, because that includes the civil law. And the, that's, yeah, that's the entire law. Just, so, like, yeah, I mean, if you just look up, like, what is the moral law? And you're going to see a bunch of theologians that parse out of those 613 commands, the ones that are moral, the ones that are civil, the ones that are ceremonial, and you follow the moral law. But I mean, it's so, like, pretty easy.
I understand. Like, I mean, I understand. But from the, you know, I'm from the day, some people will say, theologians will say the moral law reflects, it's based on like the nature and character of God. I don't know if that's true.
Of course it's true. Like, where else would we get that? I mean, like, God is telling us, you know, his moral law is going to equate to his character and nature. It cannot do otherwise, like, philosophically, right? So, like, philosophically, if God's moral law differs from his character and nature, like, what are we really saying? Like, that's kind of whack, right?
I hear you. It's like, how... But the laws regarding, like, burnt offerings, that's a law, right? That was binding on the Jewish nation.
That is a ceremonial law for okay, a different purpose.
Okay, but where, guess I'm just generally asking. I'm not trying to, like, set you up. But where does the Bible make the distinction? I understand that the division, the civil, the ceremonial, the moral, I understand that division that theologians make. But I'm asking, does Paul ever make that distinction? Did he ever say... The ceremonial law isn't binding on us, just the moral law.
Right. That so when he, well, when he goes after Peter, right, because Peter wouldn't eat with the Gentiles and people were attempting to enforce the ceremonial law, like circumcision was part of the ceremonial law, my friend. And Paul was definitely against the Judaizers and circumcising Gentiles. So, I mean, like, you know, he also says in Romans 14 about, like, you know, new moons and feasts and conscience and stuff like that. And he's basically saying that, you know, Jews that came from, you know, the Jewish nation, if they wanted to keep Sabbaths and feasts and whatever, fine, whatever, who cares? You know, they're part of the ceremonial law because it's not hurting anything. Sorry, I dropped a glass. You know, but like Gentiles are not bound to keep those things. Like, this is the whole discussion in Romans 14. Meat sacrifice to idols. This is part of Romans 7. This is part of the ceremonial law. Like, he mentions the distinction between the ceremonial and the moral law a lot.
Well, it's kind of like one of those, something someone said a long time ago, which again, got people clutching their pearls. But it's like, look, you could go, technically, you could just go out and murder someone if you wanted to. You shouldn't. Don't do that. It's against every law of God, moral, whatever. But you could. Like, that's how unbound you are. Like, as far as you must keep for your salvation. That being said, the practical, godly, living, loving God Christian is, of course, never going to do that. But you could. It's like one of those things like, I can, but I don't want to, so I don't. It's like Michael says as an atheist. Like, you know, I've murdered just as many people as I want to in my life. Zero. Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, look, as a Christian, you're not, you know, you could go out and murder someone. But if you're truly a Christian, you're never going to go do that. But for an example, Edwin, I can send you this list. But I mean, you know, I just Googled this real quick. It's like, what's the moral law? Like, there's got to be more than 10 commandments. And there is. It seems to give about 30. I haven't checked all these, but just for example, like, obviously the 10 commandments are going to be in there. But then some others. So, and that's if you care for this question. Love your neighbors yourself, don't bear false witness, don't covet, honor your parents, don't steal, don't murder, don't commit adultery, care for the stranger, widow, and orphan, pursue justice and righteousness, don't oppress or exploit others, don't oppress poor or needy people, speak truth and truthfully and with integrity, Treat others with kindness and compassion. Don't gossip or slander. Be generous and give to those in need. Show gratitude and appreciation. Do not cheat or deceive others. Seek forgiveness and reconciliation. Be faithful in marriage. Do not engage in idolatry. Don't blaspheme or disrespect God's name. Uphold the sanctity of life. Do not, and all the corresponding Bible verses are with these. Don't participate in unjust wars or violence. Practice humility and avoid arrogance. Be diligent and honest in your work. Don't discriminate or show favoritism. Protect the environment and care for God's creation. Be responsible stewards of your resources. Don't oppress employees or laborers. Respect dignity and autonomy of others. So I mean, that's just some. That's like about 30. So if you're really like, I can't go on living unless I have a list of moral laws, well, there you go.
Yeah, and I would say that even every single one of those would fall under the category, some in the Big Ten, right? I think that's the point.
And the Ten Commandments were definitely in there, too. I hope that helps everyone. Like, there's three different categories of answer we're giving. Like, I guess technically, yeah, if you need more moral laws, like, written down from the Bible, there's a pretty good list that separates those from like ceremonial or whatever law. And then also, you know, there's the other category of answer, which is just wholly bypass the entire thing and say, we are led by the law of the Spirit. The fact that our conscience screams at us not to lie, cheat, and steal. And that is also in the 613 laws of Moses. It's just coincidence because we're not bound by the law of Moses. We're bound by the law of the Spirit. It's the same God. So it makes sense that there's some overlap. And then I forgot what the third answer was. I think what Chris said.
Well, and for a handy $29.99, Nate will sell you a little list of moral laws that you can keep on your bathroom mirror in the morning to remind you. And so if you just send Nate $29.99, he will send you a laminated copy of all of the stuff you should and should not do every day.
So is Edwin just saying that he prefers to have like a specific, which I understand that because I know that there are people that like to know where that clear line in the sand is just so that they can hold themselves accountable. Is that what I think?
I think so.
Well, you know, I'm familiar with the distinction in the sermon. I just, Chris, this text that you cited was definitely pertinent and he tells him about the new moons and circumcision and so forth. I guess, I'm familiar with that. I guess I'm just thinking, would you say that ceremonial laws were only for the nation of Israel regarding how they approach and worship God? I'm just trying to think of, I guess I could just look it up. Right. I'm just wondering, like, what are the distinctive elements of a ceremonial law that distinguishes it from a moral law?
So you have to look at the purposes of the different, you know, laws, right? The ceremonial law was there to keep the nation of Israel as a peculiar people so that the line of the Messiah could come. That was the express purpose of the ceremonial law, right? Because there was no ceremonial law before Moses and people were still doing the moral law, right? So the ceremonial law was there for a specific purpose. That's that specific purpose we see in Acts chapter 10 has been fulfilled in Christ already. And so, I mean, if you want to go around, you know, not mixing fabrics and, you know, wearing a phylactery and all that stuff, I'm not going to stop you, but
you
know,
if you do it to keep your salvation, if you do it to keep your salvation, then, you know,
yeah,
problem.
We're going to have a problem, but like, you know, or if you're binding the conscience of other people that they need to do these things, then, you know, we're going to have a problem. But like, you know, if you want to cosplay being Jewish, like knock yourself out. I don't care. But like, you know, the problem comes is that when we start adding these things for other people, and that's, I think, you know, like you get some Hebrew rooters and things like that, that'll be like that. So, you know, I mean, but in terms of what the ceremonial law was for, it was fulfilled in Jesus. I also happen to think like, you know, pursuing the ceremonial law after Christ, like, I mean, the church just didn't do that. I mean, ancient Jews, you know, like we see Peter not eating with Gentiles and Paul, you know, correcting him on that. Like, cause that would have been a ceremonial thing to do. You'd be ceremonially unclean. And Paul talks about like, you know, what is unclean. And even Jesus, talked about how he would fulfill the law. He talks about in Mark 7, that the dietary laws were going to pass away. Like, I mean, this is Jesus saying this. So, I mean, you know, what makes a man clean or unclean? It is not what goes in him, but what comes out of his heart. You know, so again, I think ceremonial, because there's a lot of ceremonial stuff in terms of cleanness and uncleanness and all kinds of stuff that, you know, is in the Levitical law that, you know, we don't have to worry about today.
So as someone who keeps the Torah, is it okay if I like explain the differences to Edwin? Because it seems like that's what he's searching for. Is that okay, Nate?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's see what happens.
So the easiest way to kind of break this down, first of all, the Hebrew Bible never makes a distinction between ceremonial, moral, and civil. In that it says, these are ceremonial, you should keep only these. Or these are moral, you should keep these. The way that it does make a distinction, but it's not in the way that like modern scholarship kind of like breaks it up. The way that you can view it is this. If you are living in or around the temple, all are incumbent upon you. You have to do them all, right? Because you're a Jew, obviously, you're living in, working around the temple, etc. So ceremonial is absolutely going to be incumbent upon a person living and working around the temple because of the uncleanliness and things like that, okay? When you migrate out away from the land of Israel, then the ceremonial law just doesn't apply in the same way. You can do it, but it doesn't apply. Like, sure, if you want to not mix fabrics, that's fine, but it doesn't actually apply for the reasons it was given. One thing that you can see in the Hebrew Bible is the God of Abraham never condemns, never not once does he ever condemn another nation outside the nation of Israel for not keeping the ceremonial law or even civil law, to be honest. Civil law is like what you would do in your community, like, you know, the laws regarding like communal gatherings and communal like trees and planting and the years when it starts, the calendars. He never ever says, hey, I'm mad at you Gentiles for not keeping the ceremonial or the civil law. He does, however, destroy nations for not keeping the moral law. This is because it can be done even outside the land of Israel. Justice, mercy, not murdering, not raping, all of these things can be done outside the land of Israel. So that's the easiest way to see how the Hebrew Bible breaks it down. And that's what Peter and Paul are kind of like pointing out, the fact that it was never incumbent upon Gentiles to keep the other aspects of the law. What they're doing, though, in Acts, when they give these four things over, it's because the temple's still there. And again, you can't have Gentiles come into like, you can't be like, okay, God's opened for all, and then a Gentile come into the Holy of Holies on Yom Kippurim. That would be horrendous. You can't do that. So there's still laws and stipulations a Gentile would have to keep when there is a temple. But again, none of that is for salvation. Like none of it, not one drop of it is for salvation. So do you understand how that breakdown is?
Yeah, Edwin? Thank you. That was helpful, Courtney. I don't think I've heard it explain that. Thank you, Chris, as well. I'm just thinking, gathering my thoughts, but I appreciate this. This is helpful. Thank you very much.
We're going to have your non-mixed robes sent right to you, FedEx. Just joking. But yeah, Edwin, I'm glad that's helpful. Yeah, Chris, I think I woke up a little bit on the wrong side of bed. Like you'd have more experience this as my very senior. I 2 days ago, I like turned my head and looked to my right. And for 2 days, it feels like I have a knife stuck in my back shoulder blades. So I'm like, oh my gosh. My wife's like, what did you do? Was it exercise? I'm like, no. Which I guess maybe I should just let her think that. But I'm like, I just looked to my right and now I like pulled something and I feel like I have a knife in my back.
So if that's the case, you probably have a muscle that's pulling down under your shoulder blade. You might need to have your wife find that knot and rub it out, because a knot down there can absolutely affect your neck or vice versa. Otherwise, you'll be gimped up like that for a while.
Yeah, it's like in my upper shoulder blade area.
Okay. Yeah. So have her stick her elbow and like rub till it hurts. because that's the only way that the muscle is going to release, or else it's going to continue to clamp down and it's going to pull you to the side that it's on.
So. It's getting weird. You get to stab your elbow. Right, she'll love that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could also go on Amazon and buy, you just look up ab stimulator, but you can use it on that area, and it may only cost like $20. That would be helpful as well.
I don't want to know anything about your ab stimulator. I'm sorry.
I just find that human elbow works really good, better than those machines. It's a little fun, too, if you're ever mad at your significant other.
But the elbow's not sustainable. She may do that for him once, but he may need some sort of treatment a few times.
Oh,
or you could do it,
I apologize.
I
thought
we
that's
have
what
an actual
husband
massage therapist.
Now it's getting weird. Okay. Let's see. I got yelled at earlier, Chris, right before you came in. I'll have to tell you about it in another torrent forum.
What? Wait, who would yell at you, Nate? You're sunshine and daisies.
Oh, I'm going to tell you after this. I'll give you a call later.
Was it a papist?
No, it was one of kind of our own.
What? Okay. All right. Yeah, you'll definitely have to tell me.
It's for stupid reasons. It's for stupid technical reasons, like technological reasons. There you go. You can probably figure that out. Anyways, Dippity, I don't think we've heard from you. Did you pass out? Are your chinchilla eating you?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing?
Oh, good. Oh, and yeah, Courtney, was it yesterday? Yeah. That conversation was really good. I hated to run. Like, hopefully they'll come back sometime. But yeah, I think that was a really good conversation.
Yeah, I forgot because I went into another room. Which one was it? Was it about males and females or like the?
Oh yeah, the patriarchy. And you also have a lot of feedback, so it's hard to hear. But I mean, when you're talking, it's fine. But if you don't mute, it's hard to hear. But yeah, that's the one which shows the problem, right? That right there shows the problem. It's masked as a problem with the patriarchy. But what you really heard was like all the key verses in Proverbs, like Romans, like all the verses that talk about how people, it's a pride issue. And they're like, you know, I'll set myself up to be like God. I'll do this. So they disguise it. I mean, I believe they believe what they're saying. So it's not like a disguise of them. It's just their naivety. So they set it up. It's been sold to them as a problem with the patriarchy and all that stuff. But really, like, you know, she was like, well, because God is described as a man and I'm a woman, I can never be equal to God. It's like, oh my gosh. It's like, forget the patriarchy. Like, that's the entire, that's like one of the main themes of the Bible. Like, people, like, there was someone else that said they want themselves to be set up like God. How'd that work out? Satan. So it's like, that is such a problem, like, layers deeper than, like, a male and female. It's like, well, look, I'm a male. I can't be equal to God. That's kind of the point. It's like, no one can be equal to God. That's the entire point. Like, you're just saying that because you're a man. I'm like, no. On one hand, you're saying that it's cool because I'm a man, so I can be equal with God because it's the patriarchy. But as a man, I'm saying no one can be equal to God. That's the point. If you think you can be equal with God, that's the problem. Anyway, that was the conversation. And then I had to go.
I think it has a lot to do with people feeling like they can't. I'm sorry, my child is throwing a tantrum because he has a procedure and he's not allowed to have water. But anyways, nonetheless, but I think it's because people think, oh, I can't relate to God if I can't be, quote, equal to God or something. I don't know. It doesn't really make sense to me, but I do understand the whole, like, the patriarchy, and I understand why people do that, because we've had bad male leadership, but I don't think that equals all male leadership is bad. But the conversation was great because after I left this room, when you closed it down, I went into another one and it was like about sixth wave feminism. And there was like some things I agreed with and other things I just did not agree with. And then it went into, is it like the pendulum? Is it become like, okay, feminism is good, but then it swings way too far and it becomes bad. And then it swings way too far the other way and it becomes worse. And so it's like, find the middle ground. And that, it was a good conversation there. So it was almost like it continued from your room into that room.
Yeah, it's like whenever you have an Amazonian, you know, rainforest tribe of women and they, you know, peel the skin from their male victims. Yeah, we can say the matriarchy's gone too far.
I just don't know that. Yeah. No, go ahead, please.
Should I say my follow line, that Nate? One. This is my line, Nate. You know my line.
I actually don't. Go ahead and say it.
Patriarchy is good and right, and feminism is of the devil.
Okay. That's another thing, right? It's like the another layer deep, right? Because I mean, I could talk about it forever, but people get sick of me talking about it forever. But it's just so glaring that if you spend a little bit, and you know, even a feminist, right, that's been told they've been kept down by the patriarchy and they can be their beautiful selves and all that stuff, they're playing into the hand of people who want their demise. So, and I mean, Chris talks about this, right? Like the people who come up with this stuff, like, you know, critical theory, feminism, like all this other stuff, it's like they correctly identify problems in the world, but then the solutions they offer, it's like they use deception because they're like, okay, people have problems with these issues. We're going to tell them these are the solutions, but not only are they not solutions, they're actually completing our end, which is destroying the nuclear family, destroying civility, destroying harmony with your neighbor, and ultimately going back to like oppose the Christian God and to defeat Christianity. These people, whoever these people are, it seems like their best way is to attack the family. Like that's number one, the family structure. And so then they say that you can be a feminist, you can be as powerful as a man. And then people who think, well, have you ever been kept down by a man? Have you ever been denied a job because you're a woman? They think that's good. And they're like, yeah, I'm fighting the patriarchy. Well, really, they're fighting God, they're fighting family, and they're fighting the fabric of society that's made the good parts of this world what it is today. And they're just lemmings that are going along with people who hate them.
Yeah, and that's kind of... Oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to take Nate for a fun exercise. Nate, do you consider yourself a feminist?
I'm going to say no, but then it makes me think you're going to define that in such a way that I'd be like, okay, fine, but that's not what we really mean.
Are you in favor of women having any rights?
What are you doing right now, CEO?
Yeah, but that's like so that's what the conversation was, like the bare bones basic definition, which I would fall into the category of, yeah, I think, you know, the idea is that women want to partake in society, right? We want to be socially, economically, and otherwise get a seat at the table, relevant. And so that has happened, but then that's kind of what we were discussing. Has it then attached its or other grassroots movements have then attached to the feminist movement because it has become big enough and recognizable, they then attach to it. So there was this feminist that she said, let me make sure I say this right. So men that want to become women, is that trans women?
That's trans women. Woman, yes.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, I get confused, and that's an honest confusion.
I hate
there.
Myself that I know this.
So anyways, she said that now the very, because she's like feminist and men are putting us down, the very men that want to put us down can see that we're gaining traction. And so these men then convert to being women, and now they're saying they're women and like, I don't like this. And I understand that, because all of a sudden, instead of me being called a woman, I'm called a birthing person now. And this is a little,
a birthing person? Is
that what they're called? Is that what? No, really, that's what we're called now. Like on, no,
oh
seriously.
God.
We're not even called, you can't call a woman, me with a womb, who's birthed three children. I'm not allowed to be called a woman anymore because that's offensive to other people. And so I'm not down with that kind of stuff. I think that's the extreme. And so what she was saying is that the support of trans anything is antithetical to the feminist movement. And there were lots of people that were like, yeah, how? And then she explained it. Like, if it hurts women in any way, shape, or form, then I'm against it. And it's like, okay, cool. But is that also an extreme? Like, I get what she's saying. But then there were some men that were like, yeah, but you have to understand that the woman who, you know, founded, so to speak, 100 and something years ago, the feminist movement was in support of some of the things that you're against and against some of the things that you're in support of, like abortion and other things like that. So I don't know. It's an interesting conversation to watch how when a movement actually gains traction and people start to go, like a CEO said, like, do you support women have equal rights? Well, yeah, I guess I do. Well, then you're kind of a feminist, right? But then all these other things that you would not agree with, like if we were just to do like single vote, like polling, like, do you agree with abortion? He'd probably say no. Okay, do you agree with women having rights? He'd probably say yes. But where does it get hitched onto other things that you would not agree with? And then thus have the blanket statement of being a feminist.
Yeah, Nate, like, I was just having fun with you.
I believe you. But it's like how you also have to be called like chest feeder now. It's like, wait, what's that? You mean because right. You mean because Mayor Pete wants to strap a prosthetic breast onto himself and call himself a chest feeder? Now women have to do that too? And it's also like the trans thing is like the biggest example. Like the trans thing is like the greatest example, because it's like, now if you're a feminist who's been like fighting the patriarchy and inadvertently, you know, having a hand in like destroying the family structure for, I don't know, 70 years, now you're being eaten alive by trans women, like, who come in, and now it's like they're the real women. They're like, you know, destroying female like skulls in basketball matches. They're like, you know, swimming record, like all this stuff. So it's dudes competing against women saying they're women. So it's like all the feminists are like, wait, this isn't right. And now you see, like, there's this interview I was watching a few months ago, and it was like one of the feminist chapters of America, whatever. And it was these actual feminist women who are like, you know, down with the patriarchy. And they're like, but wait, we're women. We're women. What is this? We're being oppressed by men. And now they're being called, like, you know, phobes and bigots and all this other stuff. So it's like the thing, that the vehicle of feminism you thought was helping make your lives better, now it's like if you open your eyes, you can see that it was never really about you. It was about destroying the fabric of society, which now you have evidence of, because dudes saying they're women are beating the crap, like literally beating the crap out of you in women's sports and boxing matches and like shattering your skulls and claiming victory. And everyone is cheering them on. Like, right. you have been used to destroy things.
Yeah, and that's another thing that we were discussing, like the whole bathroom thing, right? So, and it constantly, and this is where, like, the feminists, when they, I guess they finally wake up to the fact that they've been duped, they're like, wait a minute, because a lot of these women were in support of these men transitioning into women and then being able to partake of these only women's sports, are now going, wait a minute, this was antithetical to the actual reason of me being a feminist, and now it's harming us. And so now they feel like they've been duped, and then they're realizing, wait a minute, how come the patriarchy is still ruling over me? You know, and they're like, they...
Oh, she get a call. CEO, what, or you said you were messing with me. Chris, you want to get in on this?
I just want to say one thing, Nate, because I have to run in a second. Here's just a quick anecdote about how dumb society has been, which I think flows with this conversation. The Terminex guy came by the office yesterday. When he was done, he said, make sure nobody licks the walls. I'm like, why would anybody lick the wall? He was like, it's poisonous, and you just have to make sure, and you never know these days.
that is great. I mean, that's more than like an antidote at this point. That should basically be considered subtle science. Chris, you have thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, patriarchy good, feminism bad. I'm a caveman. I only have like single syllable words that I choose. Bring me sandwich.
Yeah, Jamesy, let's see. I love it today. He's so dominated by transgenderism and feminism. Yeah, I mean, you know, we take what we can get. I forget what actually sparked that. But yeah, I mean, it's current, right? It's relevant. I mean, it's in the world. This is happening. So we may as well talk about it and relate it back to God. But hey, before you came in, I guess we were talking about the, you know, the Torah and the law and the ceremonial law. So, you know, rewind if you want to hear some actual Bible stuff, which I guess we can get back to again. The only other thing I had was,
please,
you know, let's get back to Bible stuff. The only other thing I had in current events, let's see, Trump's bloodbath comment, like that's so simple. Like,
can you explain that to me? Because I don't watch media, so like I don't know what this. Like he said about it's going to be a bloodbath. They were apparently taking it literally, like the people were going to go out and kill people. Like what?
That's,
explain this whole thing to me.
Yeah, this is like a minute explanation because it's just so stupid. All you got to do is just watch the long video. Like, basically, so CNN, of course, and MSNBC were passing this clip that was like 20 seconds where he just says, if I don't win, it's going to be a bloodbath. Meaning, and they're like, see, he wants another J6. He wants insurrection. Ah, Trump, ah. But if you just add, like, the long clip, which is like 10 more seconds, he's talking about the auto industry. So it's just such a lie. It's so on its face ridiculous that anyone who, like, that should be like a litmus test for what kind of people are normal. Like, what kind of people you can have a conversation with. If they come away thinking that, it's like, I can't have a conversation with you. If they're like, no, man, I may not like Trump for any number of fine reasons, but this is not one. Because if you just watch an extra 10 or 15 seconds, he says, look, it was a bloodbath before. He's like, in the auto industry, I'm going to put a tariff on China that's like basically double. And, you know, if I don't win, it's going to be a bloodbath. The economy is going to fail. He's 1,000% talking in the context of the economy and what's going to happen to it based on the car manufacturers from China if he does not win, and says, look, I can fix this. Here's how I fix it. Here's my plan. And if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath because his plan won't be implemented. Anyway, so like everyone on the, I guess, not legitimate news is sharing this short version where he basically says, if I don't win, it's going to be a bloodbath. And they're like, see, insurrection. But then someone took like an 8-minute clip over the last like 3 years of every single people from like The View, MSNBC, just talking about bloodbath. Like, I've heard the word bloodbath like 1,500 times, all from them. So it's fine. Anyway, so that's the context.
I can confirm Nate is correct on that. As a staunch anti-Trumper, he is correct.
Well, that is wacky. Like, I mean, you would think that, like, the media would be like, well, there is this thing called the internet, and people are going to be able to see the full clip. I mean, they could probably get away with that 20 years ago. Not anymore.
That's the argument. Like, that's what they're saying, is that this legacy media is just so out of touch that they still think, like, you know, even though they have, like, lower viewership than they ever have, that they still think they hold the reins. Like, you know, yeah, 4, 5, 8 years ago, they could have got away with it. But now it's like you can't, because there's so much, so many alternative news sources that will show things like the full clips of things and the full news. So it's like they have their heads so buried in the sand, they don't realize that. Or they're trying to do like a Hail Mary and just power through it and hope for the best anyway. So that was the argument. It's like, if you needed to know how out of touch they are, they think that's fine and no one's going to check them. Anyway, so, okay. Anyway, so the only other thing I had besides that, oh, thanks Random for coming up here just to say that. Feel free to stick around if you want. So the other non-religious news I had was, have you seen the recent Advil pain equity commercial?
Pain is nope. Racist.
Yes. Shout out for Sean. Yeah. So what pain now? Is what? Racist. So what? Advil, the maker of your baby heart medicine. they're doing this whole ad campaign. It's not even like a commercial. It's like a full-on 5-minute campaign. And they're interviewing these doctors. And they're basically saying that pain is racist and doctors are racist because doctors are saying black people feel pain differently than white people. So they are more hesitant to prescribe them pain meds and drugs. So Advil is talking about pain equity. So I just roll my eyes, and I mean, I watched the whole video and I'm worse off for it, but it's stupid. So it's like one of those things that you identify a problem. So if there is a problem, and for whatever reason, I don't even know how they get these stats, but let's just give them that and say, whoever them is, and say that if doctors are hesitant to prescribe pain meds to black people over white people, and you somehow have data to back that up, you can't say because it's racist and doctors think you feel pain differently. You can say, well, do you have a good reason? Like, it's not super easy for white people, I imagine, to get pain meds. And it's not because they're white. It's like, okay, well, you have a hangnail and you want morphine? No. That's not a time to say it's racist. It's to say, well, you don't have a good reason to have a Schedule 3 narcotic. So if you come up with your arm hanging out of your socket and, like, you know, it's been ripped off by a shark, no one's even going to ask. They're just going to give you pretty much, you know, the best stuff they got. So anyway, that's – all right. We can go back to Jesus talk now. Oh, great. I've ran off Courtney and Pastor Mark. We need to – I should check out Protestia first, right, Chris? I should probably just go there.
Yeah, you've got Michael Brown and Sam Storms beclowning themselves.
I don't know either of them.
So they're big charismatics. So, like, essentially, like, the charismatic movement just ended itself, like, this week.
Wait, when you say charismatic, okay. We can't mean, like, little churches in the middle of, like, rural America. So, like, you mean big TV network charismatic churches? Like, where does the line end? Like, with network television or...
No, I mean, like, Sam Storms is a reformed guy who's also a charismatic, and he's got a, you know, big church, and I don't know what you mean by big or little church, but essentially he can't even tell us that Benny Hinn and Kenneth Copeland are false teachers.
Oh, so he just won't, like, say they're false teachers.
Yeah, he's just like, no, I mean, I'd have to talk to them, and then... they did this whole roundtable, and Justin Peters and Jim Osmond played clips for them of, like, obvious charlatanry and, like, you know, like, nutty stuff. And they're like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, that could be bad. it was unreal.
Oh, gosh.
And, yeah.
They're
two of the biggest teachers in charismatic circles. Like, Michael Brown specifically, and
here you go, Pop.
And yeah, it was really ugly. And so the other thing is that this was filmed like 3 days before it came out that Mike Bickle from IHOP KC was like running around raping little girls. And they go on for like 20 minutes about how Mike Bickle is the gold standard of charismatic prophet, and
oh, that
he's known him
yesterday.
Yeah, he's known him for 40 years. Yeah, there's just more stuff coming out now.
Oh.
Like, it's an avalanche.
Huh. I mean, to be fair, that sounds like something I'd say. Like, well, I haven't really talked to them. I'm not familiar with them. I'd like to talk to them and make sure it's not, like, you know, taken out of context. So. Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Now, even you, Nate, with as much charity as you could muster, you would be like, no, Benny Hinn, you know, is a whack job.
So it would be easy to say that, right? But because it's because if I've done as much research and listening as you guys have, then it would probably be apparent. So I take a lot of you know what you say at your word, because I just, it's not my world. Like, I barely know I know who Benny Hinn is, but I really have no idea what he says. Like, the small limited time I have, I just have not listened to him that much. So I mean, I like to say, hey, Benny Hinn, you know, what is the gospel? He would probably say words that would have all of us being like, well, yes, on paper, that's correct. And then it would take someone else or more context or more listening. If you're saying, well, no, he means different things by that. Well, it would take longer to listen to be like, oh, when he says the gospel, he means something different. Or even if you say, okay, well, he got the gospel correct. So, but now the reason he's a false teacher is because he's using that for his, you know, other agenda or the prosperity gospel or something like that. Like, that would take more diving into to be accurate, I would think. Which it sounds like plenty of people have done that. I just have not. Am I excommunicated?
I mean, yeah, I mean, but, like, when you're presented with video evidence of people faking quote-unquote miracles, and then you're like, nah, that could be real. Or even if it is fake, it's still good. Like, that was one of the other things that was said, is that, well, yes, it's clearly fake, but it's still good. It's like, wait, what? You know, and then you realize these people, like, steal people's, like, you know, welfare checks from them and stuff. I mean, it's just, it's horrendous.
Yeah, yeah. Ask $1,000 to tell the gospel interpretation. how you doing, Rosalie? Oh, let's see what else we got. Is there anything new in Protestia? Or that was from Protestia. Prashant, what's
in
up?
Room chat, I've pinned a link to a very thorough primer on Ed Copeland, for whoever is interested. Very, very thorough.
On what?
What's that?
An introduction, a primer to Kenneth Copeland.
Oh, do you have one?
Yeah, check out the pinned link.
Oh, okay, cool.
And that's like the introduction, like telling how he's bad. Is that what that is?
Yeah, I mean, have you ever listened to Kenneth Copeland at all for like more than 5 minutes?
No, I don't think so. I saw the video, the trailer for the like Left Behind End of Days style movie he did. I have saw that, and I saw I keep seeing the meme where he looks demonic, where he's like getting inside his car, and he like turns, and that is a crazy look. But no, I really don't know anything else about him.
Yeah. He lands with the bombshell of Ephesians chapter 6, right, verse 12, where we wrestled out against flesh and blood. Man, what a creepy thing to do.
So Justin Peters, who, you know, he has that ministry that kind of calls out the charlatans, like, he literally says, I truly believe, Justin Peters says this, this is a sober, like, reformed guy that is best pals with J-Mac, and he's like, I think Kenneth Copeland has a demon. Like, he seriously, with like all like seriousness, is like, no, the guy's got a demon. It's like wild.
Well, guys, happy Tuesday. Lord Todd, Keegan, Marcus, Lou. If I start naming one, I got to name everyone. Good to see you, Francis. So, let's see. What else can we say? Chris, do you have any like giant, deep theological or historical study you've been doing, or any books you've been reading?
Actually, you know, much to Michael's consternation, my new book by Joshua Pillows just came that I've finished the first two chapters of, and it is a recapitulation of presuppositional apologetics from Van Til and Bahnsen. And it is a very good primer, like for anybody who's interested in kind of modern apologetics. It's so good. And it's not overly philosophical. So it's really accessible, and it's excellent. It's called The Objective Truth of Christianity.
You said primer.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's a primer. I mean, like, it's, you
it's
know,
it's primer. Not gonna be... Is it lever or lever? Lever or lever?
Lever.
GIF or JIF?
JIF. I was around when GIF standard was being built. I like actually like interacted with the dude on news groups and stuff. So like,
because yeah. I know, yeah, I know the inventor calls it a GIF, but you know, he can invent something good and still be wrong. So it's GIF.
Oh, we could have a whole thing about like, does an artist retain ownership of their art once it leaves the world and goes into the world, like, you know, like stuff like that, but. Yeah, no, but no, it's really good, and it's really accessible. I would really highly recommend it for you, Nate, because I think it might give you, I know you don't like reading books, but
the book learning. No, it's the precept book. I don't like the approach, like the presuppositional apologetics. Like, as a Christian, it's very easy to agree with. As a non-Christian, I have not one time ever seen it used in a way that didn't lead to like consternation and quarreling.
Oh, that's just because you haven't seen it with people who really know how to do it without getting upset. And the other problem is that clubhouse atheists are a special kind of dumb most of the time. And they, you know, they're going to just hem and haw because they know they don't have answers. Whereas like if you deal with other people, like in the real world, like it makes a lot of sense. You're just like, how do you ground reality? You know, things like that. So it's just, it would be a really good book for you to check out. I think you'd really like it, actually. I think it would dispel a lot of the myths that the atheists run around talking about.
Well, maybe, but I mean, I don't know, man. Like, if you're
against it because Michael has absolutely no answers for it.
But that's the claim, right? So like it'll basically go back and it's like claim versus claim till the end of time. And like, if someone's going to go that hard at something, you may as well just preach Jesus and let them like if they're going to fight against claims, like it may as well just be that one. Just like going guns blazing, be like, repent, the end is near, demon. Yes, you probably have a demon. Repent, receive the gospel. Instead of, how do you ground reality? It's like, just forget all that. Like, receive salvation now. And if they're going to fight against something, let them fight against that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, maybe just go read the book. It's like, really short, too. And it's broken into little bite-sized chapters. It's, like, very Nate-friendly.
I read
I'm really trying to sell this to you.
I just like reading, you know, fiction. James is going to say the Bible, isn't he? In chat, he's writing, like, the Bible? I like reading the Bible, which is true, and then I like reading books about dragons. To clarify.
I mean, how do we know dragons aren't real? Like, that they weren't. I think they probably were. I think they were probably dinosaurs. I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. You know, I think that dragons were just dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah. I was asking about the deep theological stuff because someone, they listened to the podcast and they're like, that Chris guy, man, like, he's really knowledgeable. Like, he knows a lot. Like, when he just, like, kind of my words, but he's like, when he just doesn't interact with anyone, like, when he just tells you, like, stuff, when he's just, like, free to, like, speak on a subject, like, he's really good. I'm like, I know, right? Like, we just can't let him talk to anyone.
Can't let me out of the house.
You did really good yesterday. Congratulations.
Well, I mean, and like, you know, the other thing, too, is like, you know, there was another one of these quote-unquote discussions with the anti-Calvinists last night. Sorry, I'm a little far away. I'm trying to make my last pancake. So, yeah, and, you know.
Did you get your pills?
We,
probably not.
We had a good discussion. And, but then they fled because they were leaving. Might want to mute me, Nate. I got my hands full.
All right. Let me see. Is the mute option available? It's so hard. Like, gosh, you used to just be able to click on someone and mute them. Now you have to navigate like a menu. All right, people, here's some invites. If you have anything to say, jump up and let's talk. Dippity, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you giving your chinchilla a dust bath right now?
No, I'm responding to some emails.
I bet that chinchilla would love a dust bath.
Oh, he does. He flips himself, literally.
I have to give my dog a water bath later.
The dust baths are so much more fun.
Now, do you have the little, like, clear pod that, like, you watch the little chinchilla, like, flip out inside the pod? Or do you have, like, a little, just, like, a bin and you just go clean up the volcanic ash?
We have, like, a little bin with just a little tiny hole that he can slip in the front. But that's all he goes in there for. Like, he knows. You know, you go and if you sprinkle the dust in there, he's just like, oh, yes. And he totally knows, and he just goes in there, and it's clear, so you can see him, and he just flips, and it's the funniest thing. It's the funniest thing.
Sounds adorable. Wait, mm-hmm. My wife is coming back in the room in a second. You got to tell us all about how chinchillas are adorable.
Are you going to get one now?
Not that much work. I'm trying. Oh, no, she's going to the shower. Dang it.
Wait, what about the patriarchy is good? Just bring one home. See what happens. When she complains, just be like, the patriarchy.
I mean, yeah, I can do that. I'm all about that, sure. Yeah. She's not in the room with me right now. It's fine.
Yeah, let us know when you're living in the garage.
Garage? We have rental properties. She can just, like, no, go live in a rental property. Anyway, so yeah, Rosaria Butterfield, that book, man, I'll tell you what, Five Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age, just so good, man. You should read that book too.
Someone's asking me to
ask. I got a whole like, Nate reading list, man.
All right, send it to me on Kindle.
Actually, okay. All right. Let's see if we can do that.
Someone is asking if what I should talk about the Book of Enoch. Am I supposed to ask Chris about that? Or
I literally know nothing about the Book of Enoch. I mean, I know it's a secret figure, and I know that it's like a forgery. It's literally all I know about Enoch. You know more about Enoch than I do, Nate.
Well, we were talking the other day. I think because of what Serendipity said, so I was forced to go through with this Book of Enoch. And we're like doing Genesis 5 and 6. So the premise is, you know, how some people dispute and like the kind of ways of thinking are either the sons of God were like these divine angelic beings or fallen angels or something like that that had the ability to mate with humans and produce the Nephilim. So we kind of started with, okay, the Nephilim are not the things that did any mating. The Nephilim were a category set apart. They were the product of this. And all the Bible says is giants. So we were looking at it from what the Bible actually says, discounting the Book of Enoch, or just not factoring in anything the Book of Enoch says. So we were just going by what the Bible says. So we started Genesis 5. And after about 30 minutes, like reading these chapters several times, there was a realization, and so for the people that don't think the sons of God were divine, and I just, you know, had a healthy dose of withholding judgment because whatever. I mean, how much do giants affect me in my day-to-day? Not a lot. So, you know, I read the Book of Enoch. I've read it before.
Giants affect my day-to-day?
be here all week, guys. So anyway, I'm like, well, not very much. So because of that, I just haven't really – it hadn't been near and dear to my heart, but I've read all this stuff. So anyway, we're reading Genesis 5, and one of the guys was posing this position that, well, no, the sons of God, they had to be humans. They couldn't be divine or angelic because they were talking about reading through the Genesis 5 and how the last thing in Genesis 5 talks about Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and it was saying it must have something to do with these. Well, upon further investigation, one of the, I guess, lesser talked about theories, because it's either like sons of God are divine or sons of God are not divine. But you don't really hear a lot about why they couldn't be divine, how they could be mortals and make that case. Well, it seems like it could have something to do with, because I'm like, if they're mortal, you don't need to say sons of God. Like if the sons of God are men, well, it's like the what? Humans saw that daughters of humans were pleasing? That's redundant. So it's like, why would they need to preface that? Why would they make that case? And it seems that light was shed that if they're calling them sons of God and they are just humans, a reason to do that would be because they came through the godly line of Seth, and the human daughters who were beautiful for the Bible came through the not so godly line of Cain. So I'm like, huh. So yeah. We're both kind of like, huh. And anyway, so if this is one of the things you made me talk like 5 minutes, you're like, I've known this forever. You should have read a book. Then fine. But that was new information to me because I'm like, okay, well, if they're humans, it's redundant. So I was kind of on like team fallen angel. But then after I read that explanation, I'm like, well, that would make sense because otherwise you're saying, well, sons of God, you know, who were totally humans, saw that other humans were hot and hooked up with them. Well, then why call them sons of God? But if you're separating categories of humans through lineage and through godly lines and ungodly lines, then I guess that makes more sense because not all are called sons of God.
Correct.
Is and that what you've known all this time?
They forsook their own inheritance as being the sons of God by marrying women for their physical attractiveness and not for their faith.
There you go.
Dibbity, do you have any comments on that? I know you're pretty hard on Team Fallen Angel, and I think I was like loosely on Team Fallen Angel.
I'm sorry. Wasn't paying attention.
Get
He's
out.
In chinchilla land.
I'm doing.
She was feeding her chinchilla lettuce.
Yes, Nate, I am on Team Fallen Angel.
All right. Well, maybe if you would have listened, that would have gave you pause.
Yeah, maybe.
There you go.
Maybe it was meant
Probably
to be.
Not.
Yes, we must dogmatically believe everything that we believe at all times.
I'm pretty stubborn.
I know. I'm going to crack that hard chinchilla shell someday.
I mean, I can't help that I know what I know, though, Chris.
You what?
I know that you know that I know that you know.
I know. You know that I know. So I can't help that I know what I know, okay? It just doesn't get unknown.
If you can't show it, you don't know it.
How's that for who's on first?
I love it. How many chinchillas does it take to screw in a light bulb?
None, because they're so cute and fuzzy. They get their owners to do it for them.
Yep. Kind of like ladies.
Exactly.
All you got to be is like, hey, can you put in that light bulb for me? And men are going to be like, yeah, sure.
No, all I got to do is pretend like I'm going to try.
You know? Oh, that's true. Well, this is how I pretended to do laundry one time and messed it all up on purpose.
Let me pretend to do laundry in 30 years. And set it, you know, under that light bulb. And what do you think you're doing? I was going to change the light bulb. Be that.
I'm struggling so hard.
Oh, I'm sure I can get it. I mean, how does that little cover thingy come off of there? Can I just pull on it? Here, get out of the way.
Dippy is betraying her fellow females by revealing their secrets.
Right.
Oh, I wasn't paying attention. What? How's it feel? How's it feel?
Sorry.
How now does it feel?
Hey, it didn't make you feel good that, you know, I'm happy to choose my morning time listening to you in the background, even if I'm always paying attention.
We feel #blessed.
#blessed.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Oh, so yesterday my son and I watched Spider-Man 1 and 2, the Sam Raimi ones, with their like really cheesy CGI, where like the video game these days actually looks better than the CGI in these movies of Spider-Man like web slinging through buildings.
Like the one with Tobey Maguire?
Yeah. He and loved it.
Man.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna break you.
Yeah. Nice outfit. Did your boyfriend buy it for you?
No, your husband. Oh. I mean, there's so many good lines in that movie. It's just so cheesy. But it's like comic book cheesy. Like, I think comic book movies have gotten more ridiculous, not less ridiculous, because it's like, dude, you're talking about a dude who has spider powers. Like, I mean, just make it a comic book movie. There's not like, oh, we got to ground it in reality, like a gritty Spider-Man. You know, it's like, nah, man, it's Spider-Man. It's ridiculous. And I also love that it's long enough ago that Tobey Maguire's rocking an F1. Like, he's rocking film cameras, and he's like literally shooting all these pictures on film cameras, and I'm like, wow, look at that. But yeah, so JC loved it, and we're going to watch Spider-Man. I've never seen Spider-Man 3,
because I just heard it sucked. Or Venom makes an appearance? Or
yeah, it's like Venom, Sandman, and Green Goblin. So there's three villains. Because it's Spider-Man 3, you see. Get it, Nate? Three villains, third movie. Got to make it bigger, man.
Oh. Someone else. Yeah, let's rubber band back to another topic. Someone is asking, who Kane married? On the more heretical towing the line, God allowed some sort of quasi-evolution thing to pop up, maybe kind of how your modern atheist would view it. And the only difference is they did not have a soul. And they were kind of like a Neanderthal or something like that were able to interbreed with humans, like Planet of the Apes or something. And that's where Cain went to find a wife. Or the more, I think, biblically aligned answer would be that, you know, Adam lived like almost a millennium. So the guy lived a really long time. So, you know, he and Eve, whenever they got kicked out of the garden and, you know, went and made babies, they had a long time to do it. So they could have made, you know, some babies who were like, I hate you, Mom. I hate you, Dad. And they took their little knapsack and left and wandered around and became their own people.
Everybody married.
Yeah.
Everybody married their brothers and sisters back then. I mean, like that.
So is that what you, is that how you think it happened? Like Adam and Eve, like, you know, had a bunch of kids over a long period of time, and then that is where the other people came from.
Yep. I mean, I mean, I think that 99% of Christians have thought that for a really long time. The fact that that was even a question in the Scopes Monkey trial, and that like Clarence Darrow did not have the answer for that, is just showed that like he was just a lawyer and not actually like knows anything about the Bible. And it's like, where did Cain's wife come from? And it's like, is that the atheist gotcha question? Like, seriously, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. It was one of his sisters or one of his cousins. Like, duh. Like, what else did you think it was?
And then, then they're like, well, the inbreeding, first of all, if you've ever like oohed and awed over Queen Elizabeth, just stop right there. Secondly, you know, if God is creator and sustainer of every single molecule in existence, he can certainly figure out how to diversify the gene pool in a way that's not going to be a problem. And also, you know, if they lived like, 900 years, probably pretty good genetics, or miraculously sustained by God, doesn't matter.
Right. Well, the theory currently is that their DNA was perfect, and that over time, all of the genetic manipulation of sin works its way down into the genome. And that, you know, eventually when you get the Mosaic Law, the genome has, degraded to the point where, you can't marry your sister, man, you know? And I think that practice had gone by the wayside a long time ago. But, you know, that there's laws in the Levitical law about that because the genome had, you know, degraded. So.
And also surrounding like the 130 years, like, I mean, what significance do you think that had? Do you think God's like established that cutoff point? So I don't know. It was like a significant, decline in lifespan. Do you think like scientifically that would be because like the DNA was just like really jacked up at that point compared to what it had been?
It could be, or there could have been just an ontological change in the human race. We just don't know. Like, I mean, I would probably favor the idea of the ontological change in the human race, because it seems kind of, you know, like night and day. You know, it's like, you know, you get Methuselah before the ark, and then whatever, the ark is, you know, on the water for a year, and then it's like, okay, now I'm going to limit the days of man, you know, to 130 years. So it's like, if it was a gradual decline in the DNA, I would think that, you know, you would be like, oh, you know, so-and-so, you know, Shem, Ham, and Japheth lived for 600 years. Like, you don't see any of that, right? So you see, like, an ontological change in the makeup of the human genome, I think, at that point. And that probably would have been a special act of God, I would imagine.
Yeah, was T around? I wish she was around. Like, what's the actual biologist think? Because they act like it's all icky. It's like, ew, you married your sister. What do they think happened in their view, though? Like, they don't think there were multiple abiogenesis events. They think there was one. So eventually, you know, one thing, like, split off into two. So if those two things reproduced, it's from the same source. So it's like bacterial incest or something. So, I mean, what's their great answer? No? No one? Okay. Well, that's the answer. That's what I'm going with. Good morrow, Steph. Hello. Nice to see you.
Instead of just like,
be right back. Yeah, my son is telling me a story. Wait, what's the guy's name, JC? Queso. He's telling me a story about a streamer named Queso. He's like this big dude and enormous guy, and like he's got this whole meme culture around him now. So he's letting me in on Gen Z stuff, and he's not in school because it's spring break. And so tomorrow, today I've got an appointment at 10, but tomorrow we're going to see Dune Part 2 for the third time in the theater.
Wow.
Yeah, so my son and I and his best friend Lucas are going to go see Dune Part 2 on IMAX.
Well, I guess I need to see Dune 1 at some point.
It's on TV. You can watch it on Hulu, bro. It's really good. Like, the whole thing is, what's a what? Oh,
what's a
so, like the whole message of Dune is like, hey, looking to the government to save you is a very bad idea. This is a movie that you would really resonate with, Nate.
Do I have to think a lot?
There is some philosophy in it, like The Matrix, so you're going to have to think a little bit.
Okay, wait, you know?
But there's like lots of explosions. Like you can think, you know, in between the explosions.
Okay, but even you couldn't like all of the Matrix movie, right? Like I was pretty good on Matrix 1, but by the time we get to like the second Matrix and especially the third one, I'm just like, this is ridiculous.
There's only it was bad writing. They should have just been one and done. Like, just make the Matrix, and then I just pretend the other two don't exist. Yeah,
there's you know, there's a, you know, there's a Matrix 4, right? You know, that came out before
the
Matrix.
Yeah,
the regurgitations. Yes.
Yeah, my wife and I watched it. It was all right. It was not.
I made it 50 minutes in.
Because I mean, my wife and I grew up. We were like, you know, in our 20s when the Matrix came out. You know, so our early 20s. Yeah, I think. Well, maybe late 20s. So we were in our late 20s. But like, you know, that was our generation. You know, it's like The Matrix and Fight Club. Think about that. Those movies came out in the same year.
Oh, really?
In 1999. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Matrix and Fight Club.
In 99, I was 17 years old. And Steph was still in diapers.
Yeah, my wife is like, yeah, we thought the world was going to end in 2000 anyway. So, you know, we had Y2K coming.
Oh, gosh. I remember, like, around my city, they put all these, like, little collapsible fold-up stop signs, like, for Y2K. They're everywhere. Like, you know, the ones that open in four parts, like a stop sign.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously?
They never used them. Oh, yeah. They were ready for the end of the world.
Crap I've ever heard.
Oh, and they put them at four per intersection. So it was the fold-out signs. They never got used, not once. They spent all that money and then just took them all away.
I mean, they had collapsible stop signs wherever Nate was growing up. Because you would have been like, so you're 10 years younger than me, right? Did we establish this? I'm 51.
Oh, then yes.
Yeah, okay. So you were born in 1982, so you would have been like, you would have been like 18. You would have just been graduating high school. Were you class of 2000?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you would have just been graduating high school. Okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, me too.
I was a young one.
Yeah, I just was. My birthday is around, well, I'm not going to say it online because I don't want somebody to steal my identity, but like, you know, my birthday is late, is like right at the cutoff. So, but anyway, so, I mean, I'll tell you my birthday so you don't miss it this year. But
Steph was 10 then? Wait, when, in 2000? So if you're 10
years
younger
than me. Steph is 10 years younger than you.
She's no,
she's 20
not.
Years
no.
younger than me. Yes.
No. She's 31.
Yeah. How old do you think Steph is?
I mean, no matter what I say now, I'm evil. But I thought by her own admission, she was like mid-30s. Like, I didn't just assume. I thought I remember she said something like that. I'll sit down. Sorry. She's 35, see?
Okay, whatever. So you're 6 years older.
All right, I'm not a monster. All right. I have a hard time doing math. Yeah, you said 1989. Like, you tell me Martian. My kids are really good at math, somehow.
Because your kids are half Asian.
Wow! Wow!
It doesn't come from you, my friend.
What's up, Michael? Bring us back to the edge.
Yeah, I'm incredibly old when I hear how young Steph is. It's kind of crazy.
What's on your mind today?
What's on my mind today? It's funny. I was thinking a lot about the discussion that was going on yesterday. It was a good one. It's too bad that it had to end. But I think it was a good discussion. I was spending some time going over a few different things, and I have a different view now. Well, not a different view. A more thought out view on how terrible presuppositional apologetics is.
Chris was just hoping you'd see it more favorably.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's funny. I think when you break it down to its lowest common denominator, if you want to go the precept way, it's fine. You just have to be prepared to accept that your entire epistemology is based on a logical fallacy. And as long as you're cool with that, then okay. Have a nice day.
Which logical fallacy would that be?
In an effort not to get me to bang my head against the door, do we have anything else on the table? I do know, Michael. Like, it was a good discussion yesterday. I kind of got lost at, like, when it turned to, like, the patriarchy. I'm kind of like, eh. Because, like, I see that as people who are ill-informed. Because I don't see how it could be another way besides ill-informed. And if somehow I met someone that was very informed and they still took up that cause, I don't think that's a person that would be what we'd call reasonable for a conversationalist. So I kind of like zoned out during that point, but I mean, Courtney was.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I think the Christian worldview. I think if you look at all of the, you know, the three major monotheisms, they are all based on patriarchal structures. I don't think there's anything controversial about that. But I mean, yeah, like it. I mean, it's just, I don't even think that's something that's worth arguing the point. I mean, Allah is seen as a male figure, and both Judaism and Christianity, you know, seeing Yahweh as a male, even like the Bible even talks about, you know, being our heavenly father, right? Like it's not, I don't see it as controversial in any way, shape or form. It's not a sword I throw myself on.
Yeah. And it wasn't a controversial thing for me. Like my distaste for it was one of your main arguments being, because it's a dude, I could never follow that God because patriarchy. Like that's it for me. Because I'm like, seriously? I'm like, if it was a snake God, I'd be like, well, I'm not a snake. But if the snake God says it loves me and will let me hang out and be cool with it forever, then all right, I'll follow a snake God. Like it's just like that. Like, what would you even call that? Like ontological, like makeup is the reason you, or maybe that's the wrong word, but like whatever it is, right? If my, I don't know. It's like, if it was a goddess, right? If it was like, or some non-binary 32nd gender, I'd be like, all right, well, if that's the one true maker of everything that says I can be cool with it, then all right, I guess I'm following that thing. So just the fact that like, oh, your God's a dude, so I will never follow that God. It's like, that is such a weak argument that it almost feels like naivety has gripped them in a way that you could be like, you like take your stance, like you don't follow this God because you espouse that you don't have a belief in this God. That's a good answer. I mean, I believe it's a wrong answer, but I mean, at least it's a legitimate reason versus, oh no, Nate, I cannot follow your God because he's a man. Come on.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't get that nuance from the discussion. If that.
Oh, she said it.
Oh, I didn't hear that. If that was what was being put across, I would agree that that's a weird reason not to. You know, like for example, like if it could be demonstrated that this God was actual, right? Then I might not follow it because I disagree with it morally, but it wouldn't have anything to do with it. And this is just me, right? It wouldn't have anything to do with it being male from my perspective. I wouldn't care if it was a nine-headed snake. If it was representative of the God of the Bible, I probably wouldn't follow it because I think it's an immoral entity. But that doesn't have anything to do with its sex, gender, or otherwise. But unfortunately, there is nothing else to talk about. So, Chris, to go back to what your question was, the logical fallacy is begging the question, and I'll tell you how that is the case. So, I can't tell you how many. And if you take a different stance, I'd be curious to hear what it is. But for example, Matt Slick and others who take that presuppositional approach. Matt Slick has said, quote, if you don't start with the Christian God, you don't have a basis for anything. End quote. That is, by its very nature, begging the question. Because you are starting with this God exists. So, like I've said a million other times, you're starting with your conclusion. When you do that, your entire epistemology is now based on that logical fallacy. And if you're okay with that, Chris, then that's cool. But just know that at every opportunity, I will call you out for having a worldview based on logical fallacies.
Right, right. And we would say that's nonsense because what we're saying is we build our epistemology based on divine revelation. You are basing your epistemology on nothing.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you ask me what I base my epistemology on? How did you, or are you just going to answer all my questions for me?
No, I mean, I just, there's the impossibility of the contrary.
Really? Okay. Okay. That's a claim.
Divine revelation means.
That's a claim.
Okay.
That's a claim.
I mean, we can go through it. I'll precept you.
Yeah. That's a claim. Demonstrate it's impossible. Demonstrate the impossible, the contrary is impossible. You made a claim. Demonstrate your claim.
Excuse me, I'm dropping my father-in-law off. Give me a minute. And I do have an appointment at 10 that I mentioned previously. What do you order?
No worries.
Give me a second. I don't know what you're talking about. Sounds like a Dodge.
Ouch. You know it's bad when they take my side.
And how can anybody base something on nothing? That doesn't make any sense either.
Like the Big Bang? What? Sorry. Just being funny.
Even that's not based on nothing.
I know.
Yeah, so real quick. I base my epistemology on the divine revelation of God. Okay? You guys only have fizzing sacks of chemicals that you can base your epistemology on. You sack of chemicals... You have no epistemology outside of your subjective sense prism. My epistemology is based on objective truth that is outside of our sense prism.
Oh, how are you defining objective, Chris?
Something that is true for all people at all places, in all situations, everywhere, for all time.
Okay, so...
i.e. the existence of God, i.e. The pre-existence of Christ, i.e. the resurrection of Christ, et cetera, et cetera. So these are objective truths that we learn from the scripture, revealed to us by God.
Right. So thank you so much for demonstrating all of the points that I've made to you in the past. So first of all, it's not objective because the commonly accepted definition of objective is mind and stance independent, which you're not using. You're using your mind, which you start with your senses. You observe these, you observe and take in these revelations through your senses, so they're not objective. They are completely subjective. So what you do is you project onto us your own problems, and you positively do not start with God. Sorry, you just don't. You can't demonstrate that. You also, in no way, shape, or form, demonstrated the impossibility of the contrary. All you did, and this is what presuppositional apologetics do, What you do is assume your conclusion and assert your assumption. That is it. That is all.
Yeah, that's not what I'm doing. And also, you're assuming your conclusion as well. You're assuming the not God world.
That's no,
you are
no,
exactly
no,
guilty
no, no.
of the exact
no,
same thing that
no.
you are trying to accuse me with.
No,
that's insane.
I didn't start with not
I mean,
God.
Like,
I concluded not God.
Literally, you are saying things that you are impugning me with, and you are having the exact same presuppositional problems that you're accusing me of, whereas I am appealing to divine revelation that is outside. And again, divine revelation is not subjective. Divine revelation occurs whether or not I exist. I'm not a solipsist. I don't think you are either. Whether you, me, or Nate even had ever been born, all of the facts of divine revelation would continue to be true.
Well, yeah, but unfortunately what you just did there is something called the tu quoque fallacy, which is you're stuck in the same boat as I am, so that's another fallacy you're committing.
And
what you're doing...
I'm not committing that fallacy. You are committing that fallacy by accusing me of something that you have a problem with, and I'm saying I don't have that problem. I'm saying my basis for my epistemology is outside of your realm, of your not-God world.
the basis the basis for your epistemology is a stipulation. Yeah, the basis for your epistemology is a stipulation, not a demonstration. You are simply stating, this is the fact, therefore, X, Y, Z. So,
right,
okay.
Because I'm coming from the Christian worldview.
Right, so what you're doing, so thank you. Okay, so you're admitting, you're just stipulating, not demonstrating.
Well, again, given a little bit more time,
come on, Chris, have the courage of your conviction.
What I was going to tell you is that I'm two chapters in to the new Joshua Pillows book, which is a introduction into presuppositional apologetics. And so it is a compilation and put into small containers and little 10-page chapters of Cornelius Van Til and Greg Bahnsen demonstrating their philosophical ideas. And so, you know, we can get to Kant and we can get to, you know, the failure of your system. You know, you mix between, in your epistemology, you mix between rationalism and empiricism and some pragmatism. And I am simply coming at it from the transcendental argument. And so if you want to have a discussion about, like, which one of those four systems is best able to describe truth, we can do that. Again, it's not dishonest. It's not starting with your conclusion, because again, you are starting with your conclusion that there's the not God world. So, you know, I mean, no one can escape starting with their conclusion. Zero people. And so for you to accuse me of starting with my conclusion when you as well are starting with your conclusion, because everyone starts from their presuppositions, that's just a dishonest argument.
No, it's not. And I'll explain why. So I didn't start with God doesn't exist. That was my conclusion. It was not my starting point. So again, like your projection shows. And the problem is that tag or the transcendental argument, and there's more than one transcendental argument for the existence of God. So I'll be curious as to know which one you're going to be using. Because like I said, there's more than one. But the problem with that is that again, it involves nothing but stipulations. So if you start with because God exists, blank, 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 you're starting with your conclusion. So and you're also stating what my metaphysical positions are, but you're not stating them correctly. OK, I am a naturalist. OK, I believe when you break it down to the lowest common denominator, it's all natural stuff. So, again, you are attempting, what you're trying to do is project onto me saying you're a rationalist, you're an empiricist. And so what you're doing is you're projecting onto me. And then you will pull from a slate of scripted answers based on, so to an empiricist say X Y Z, to a naturalist say A B C. No, hang on, let me finish. And these are the things you're doing, and they are all fallacious in their basis. And like I said, if you're cool with starting with
show me the fallacy.
I already did. Begging the question.
No,
that
didn't.
Was the first one. Okay. Okay, so your lack of understanding what the fallacy is doesn't mean you're not committing it.
Right, same for you. And so here's the thing, is like, again, the philosophical categories that I mentioned are the categories in the literature. You can rename yourself a naturalist, but there are only four philosophical categories in the actual literature in philosophy. And so I'm not pigeonholing you, dude. Like, other philosophers and atheist philosophers are the ones who are pigeonholing you into one of those four categories. And my point is that you have, in previous discussions, mixed rationalism and empiricism, which is incoherent because you have to stick with one of the categories or you're belying the truth of the category.
No, I have to stick with one of the categories in order for your script to work.
No. I'm just talking philosophically. If you were to have this argument with Jack Angstreich, he would call you on the carpet and say, look, dude, you've got to go with one of the categories. You can't just mix and match and have a buffet of philosophy. Like,
who
it doesn't
the hell
make
is
any
Jack
sense.
Angstreich?
Exactly. He's like the atheist god. So he's like the guy here on Clubhouse, all the atheists look to as the final boss of atheism. And so he's very,
okay, so
very
I'm an atheist, and
philosophy.
I just told you I don't know who this guy is. So clearly what
right.
you said is just incorrect.
I mean, he hasn't been around in a little bit. He was always around in the atheist rooms, which I know you didn't frequent, but like, you know, my point being that he is very philosophically savvy.
So,
and he would tell you, like, Michael, you're wrong about these things. You need to read a few more, you know, things about philosophy in order to make your arguments correctly. I mean, and he would be against precepts all the time. Like, he would go up against Matt Yester and all these other guys, and he would win sometimes because he was, like I said, extremely good with philosophy. And all I'm telling you is you can make up all the categories you like. It doesn't change, like, how these things are philosophically relevant.
Okay, so does any of this change the fact, if we go back to what the original question was, you stated because of the impossibility of the contrary, does any of the things you just said demonstrate that the contrary is in fact impossible, or is it just another stipulation on your part?
No. It would take some time, and again, I'm just starting to dip my, probably more than my toe at this point, but, you know, my foot into the water of precept. I have to read probably about 10,000 more pages to really get deeply into some of the philosophical arguments, and I've committed myself to doing that. So, you know, the first thing I got to do is read, you know, a couple thousand pages about rationalism and then empiricism and then pragmatism, and then I'll get to the tag, and that'll give me some grounding. So I've got to read a bunch of Kant and Hegel and some of these other pretty dense philosophical authors in order to have an intelligent conversation about these things. So, like I said, all of this Van Til was able to prove, and no one has been in the literature, again, you know, people that do this for a living, philosophers, no one has been able to answer Van Til or Bahnsen professionally. It just doesn't exist. So if you can point me to a resource where somebody thinks that they have, you know, beaten up on Van Til and Bahnsen, then great. Pillows answers some of those critics in the last chapter of his book, which is kind of different because it's like 70 pages as opposed to like 10 for each chapter. So I'll be reviewing the objections to the different transcendental arguments. And you are correct. There are many transcendental arguments for God. But coming strictly from the Van Tilian idea of these things, you know, there have been critiques, but then Pillows goes ahead and answers those critiques. And so no one has successfully broached from any philosophical school the Van Tilian apologetic.
So do any of Van Til's writings go about demonstrating the an answer to a question I asked you?
Yes.
Oh, are you telling me there's Van Tilian writing somewhere that demonstrates that the contrary is impossible?
Yes. It's literally called the impossibility of the contrary. This is one of the main points of Van Tilian apologetics.
And it demonstrates the impossibility. It demonstrates it.
Yes.
It shows how God has to exist, does it?
Yes. And so the book that I am reading right now, which I would highly suggest that you get, it's very accessible. Like, so far I haven't had to read all of the Kant in order to get the arguments. So this is good, right? So, like, if you want to pick up the book, it's great. It's called The Objective Proof of Christianity. The Objective Proof of Christianity. Not the objective, I'm going to make a claim. The book is literally called The Objective Proof for Christianity.
I am clicking it into...
You can't find it on Amazon. You just have to Google it because it's on, like...
That's what I'm looking at right now.
Oh, did you find it?
I haven't found a book for it.
Yeah, I mean, it just came out like a week ago. So, it's called The Objective Proof for Christianity by Joshua Pillows. And man, I do appreciate you reading this book. Like, maybe read this book with me. You make your notes and I make my notes, and we'll have a very special Blossom edition of Ask a Christian, and you and I can compare notes. Nate, have you ever done a very special edition of AAC?
It seemed, maybe not very special. There have been some special ones, but, I mean, gosh, I want to say, sure, I'll start it up, and then I need to give the notation, like the official position of Asa Krishna is don't commit suicide.
All right, Chris, I understand you have to go. I also have to go. But yeah, do better, Chris.
Did you find the book?
I found the book. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, then let's do. Are you interested in doing that? Like, get the book, and then let's both make notes. And I'm trying to pull into a park.
If I can find a place to actually purchase the book, because I won't just take a if I can find a place to purchase the book legitimately. I don't want to just download a PDF. I like to support authors.
Oh yeah. Oh, you found the PDF. Okay. Well, let me. I think I could send you a link to the actual website where you could purchase it.
Do you remember the actual website where you purchased it?
You have my email, so send it there.
Okay.
All right, guys, I gotta go.
All right. Take care. See you later, Chris. You out too?
Yeah. I gotta go. I'm trying to park, and like this idiot is just sitting in the parking lot, halfway in a parking space, blocking everything. I'm just like, can you guys let me go to my appointment now? Like, what are you doing? And he's still sitting there in the middle of the parking lot. It's really weird.
Well, Godspeed.
Hold the place up, maybe
wait for a minute.
Yeah. Jeez.
Hey, what's up, James?
See you guys later.
Later. What's up, James? Steph, the mean man.
Hey, how's it going?
Say hi to us.
Yeah, I was just waving goodbye to what's his name? Michael. How you been?
Good. It's been a little bit. What's been going on?
Not much. Same old, same old.
Well, have you guys had poke bowls? Is that how you say it? Like P-O-K-E? Pokey.
Sushi?
It's like if sushi was in a bowl, it's like that.
Yeah. Those are good.
So it's pokey? That's how you say it? Like the long?
I don't know the pronunciation. All I know is when I get them, it's just sashimi. There's no rice. It's just that with like lettuce and seasonings.
Yeah, I had one the other day. I want one again. They're really good. It's like, it's like the equivalent of like two or three sushi rolls, like in bowl form.
Right.
Well, what's the most exciting conversations you've had lately?
It's all the same, bro.
I don't know, man. Like, I don't like the pre-sup. I don't like it. If you're a Christian, it's no problem because you already agree with it. If you're not a Christian, it's like that's the hardest uphill battle to fight, is to basically get people to concede two things that people would not readily concede. Like, I don't know, man. It seems like if you're going to dedicate that much time and effort, and like how Chris was saying, it's like, I've got to read like 10,000 pages. It's like, if you have to read that much for an argument, just read the Bible. Like, if you're going to have that much of an uphill battle anyway, then just, you know, be like, repent, the end is near, believe Jesus. I mean, if someone's going to reject something, let it at least be that. I don't know. I just don't have a favorable opinion of the precept stuff. And I suppose you don't either?
Yeah, I agree with you, dude. I don't think pre-sup actually leads to the conclusion that's the case, right?
Yeah. Well, if no one has anything else, I have to give my puppy a bath right after this match of Fortnite.
You got a new family member, four-legged friend?
Oh, we've had him for about a year. Yeah, it's going to be his birthday next week. He'll be 2 years old.
Sweet. What kind of dog?
That's a terrier mix. We got him from the pound. He's like mostly like Jack Russell Terrier, but then he's got like a underbite. So we think he is like mixed with like a boxer or something like that, maybe.
Cool. Nice.
But yeah, he's like super cute. Like, yeah, we like him.
Cool, cool. Oh, what's up with your gangster Jesus PTR, dude? What's up with that?
I think that's supposed to be like a. I think it's supposed to be a modern interpretation of Jesus, like driving out the money changers with a whip, but instead it's using guns.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, some people are offended, some people aren't. I'm like, come on, guys, it's all good fun. All right.
Well, I gotta step into my. All right, we'll see you later, man. I gotta step in my office. It was cool chatting.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Don't be a stranger. All right, everyone.
Yep.
Bye, Nate. Peace.
All right, take care. Oh, now you answer. See you later.